Studios at Universal Orlando Resort.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Smart Clock Podcast is back once again.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
Finally, The Rock has come back to Washington, D.C.
Welcome to WCW Monday Nitro. We're on the air for three.
Ladies and gentlemen, Season 2 is now upon us of Manic Mondays.
Do you like my movie voice, Steve?
It's such a good movie voice. Where did that come from?
I'm Colin McFarlane. Oh, no, actually, no. It's one of those things like,
in a world where the Manic of Mondays is manic.
Just that really cheesy shit that you get.
This is how you saw Caesar.
So good. Damn it. Yes, Manic Mondays is back, ladies and gentlemen. I am your ever-present host, Amir Azzanetti, and joining me, most importantly, is the creator of Manic Mondays and the concept itself, Steve Neal.
Yes, we are back. And this is going to be one of our Manic Monday specials because we haven't put out a poll. So we have jack shit to talk about. However, it is WrestleMania week. So we thought we'd just do a fairly casual Manic Mondays with a bit of a nostalgic trip talking about WrestleMania past and some of our favorite matches and some of our favorite moments from WrestleMania's gone by, from early days through to the more recent Manias, perhaps even up to last year. As we head into WrestleMania, what are we on now? 34 this year, is
34
it?
Indeed.
34. That's too many WrestleManias, quite frankly. We could have done with about 10 fewer. We could shed about 10.
Yeah, I could eliminate 10 easily just thinking about some of the shite I've seen.
Absolutely fuck. We could just condense down. But yeah, so I was thinking about some of my kind of favourite, I guess one of my guilty pleasures from WrestleMania's gone by, and it's an absolute carny bullshit match, and it's stupid, and it's terrible in every way, apart from the fact that it's brilliant, is from WrestleMania 2000, which would have been 16, and that was the hardcore title battle royal where Crash Holly, there's about 40 title changes during the course of the match, and it's just
Wikipedia's
it's
just so, got a it's fucking just, job on.
It's so good for throwing out every jobber on the roster so they all get their WrestleMania moment. Viscera, you're not doing anything. You're not dead yet. Get out.
That's the original Andre the Giant Battle Royal, isn't it, in a lot of ways?
Basically, yeah. But they're allowed to smash each other in the face with trash cans.
Therefore, it is
kendo sticks and chairs. Absolutely. Crash Holly jumping off shit and being insane. And Steve Blackman running around.
Yes.
Good old Steve Blackman. Al Snow. WrestleMania moment for Al Snow. It was just, I love that. Bob Holly, throw him out there.
That's a great first memory to open with. Everyone's sitting there going, they're going to talk about the greatest matches of all time. The Hardcore Battle Royal with Crash Holly
and
Saucepans and Steve Blackman with nunchucks. You will eat that WrestleMania moment. That is a quality. Absolutely. I love that match. I love the hardcore division general. I miss the comedy of it, and I miss the creativity that went with it as well. Braun Strowman, I think half the reason Braun Strowman's so popular is because he taps into that hardcore culture, that tipping over trucks and eating chocolate cake backstage and all these dumb things that, you know, the great thing about a hardcore title is it's the sort of thing where Vince Russo can throw his crap at the wall and most of it will stick because, you know, it is kind of bollocks, but it's
on the proper undercard.
Fun. Yeah, it is. It's the undercard bollocks. You know, No Way Out 2001, I think. Show opens with Raven versus Big Show for the hardcore title. You know, and then all of a sudden, down comes sexy ninja Torrie Wilson with a 2x4. There's the one Billy Gunn, Crash Holly in some sort of concessions outfit. And, oh my God, just utter carny bullshit. You know, even referees are trying to get in on the joke. And that's the fun of it. The fun of it is everywhere. It's like almost like have a go superstar for the day.
Yeah. Literally felt like anyone could win. They pretty much did win the hardcore title. I think pretty much everyone was hardcore champion at some point. But it was just, it was so entertaining and it was so fun. It was so good. Like, was it WrestleMania 7? Yeah, WrestleMania 17, where they had the triple threat for the hardcore title, Raven versus Big Show versus Kane. And Raven's like jumps on a golf cart to escape with Big Show jumping on the back, trying to beat him. And then Kane chases them down in another golf cart. Oh, it's so good.
With a referee in tow as well.
Yeah,
a referee's like on the bank. Kane's just like, get back here. Fucking brilliant.
So
work.
Good. Oh, it's just so much fun. It was so silly. I love the hardcore title. I agree. Braun Strowman, like Elias, people who are just kind of, you know, Rhino, who actually probably, he definitely must have been a hardcore champion at some point back in the day.
Absolutely.
With his ECW background.
He rather famously lost the title to Mike Awesome, didn't he? That was the first shot fired in the Alliance.
Yeah. The suplex onto a ladder or something, wasn't it? Out the
back. Yeah, he fucking powerbombed him onto a ladder. I was like, oh my God. Not the nice way either. Like, straight flat on it. I was like, oh, you bastard.
Do it on an ECW star. No WWF guy's taking this shit, but it's straight under the Heyman guy. Love it. Rhino, what a hero. But people like that running around the hardcore title, giving them something to do, getting them on TV, giving them stuff which is silly and fun. You can have some intergender stuff going on as well. Ah, oh, it'd be so good. Becky Lynch isn't doing anything at the moment. Have her smashing Rhino in the face with a steel chair to win the hardcore title. It could be cross-brand as well, so it just pops up on Raw and SmackDown. Ah, oh, so fucking good. It would be so good. You carry on.
I was just going to say, like, in reference to the hardcore stuff, WrestleMania's really gotten away from giving the mid-card something good to do. Like, the Battle Royal now is a pre-show. Like, what the fuck?
Mm.
That's, oh, we immortalized Andre the Giant so much, we stuffed him on the pre-show after 1 year of having it. Like, a big fuck you to his legacy. But, I feel like WrestleMania, in a sense, takes itself too seriously now. And it gets to the point where it's like, well, what happened to all the fun? You know, I don't want to see Braun Strowman in a serious tag team contest. I want to see him tipping up the set and trying to fucking destroy people backstage and crazy shit like that. It doesn't all have to be straight-laced matches anymore. It feels like we're trying to force everything to be of a certain degree of quality. Even though, you know, like Breezango, for instance, would be amazing in the hardcore division.
Brilliant.
They are made for it. And they're so entertaining.
He could be the new Crash Holly, I think, Tyler Breeze, in that situation. Just running around.
Entertainment for marquee value. It's like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Undertaker, John Cena, that has its place and it will draw in fans. But also, people like to be entertained. They don't just want to have 4 or 5 block hours of solid, serious contenders wrestling. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's nice to have the celebrity moments. You know, I want to see Breezango backstage with insert whatever B-list celebrity they've dragged in for this event. You know, there are fun things to be done, and the hardcore title represented that. It's like WrestleMania 17 with that gimmick Battle Royal. Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah, it's not a great wrestling match, but it's fun, and everybody's sitting there thinking, I remember Hillbilly Jim. You know, the amount of people we must have used for our mid-card of the week.
Yeah.
Properly in that Battle Royal. It's obscene.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the... I completely agree the fun's going to... I mean, is there even any gimmick matches at this year's WrestleMania? As in, you know, there's not a ladder match or a table
crazy
match.
Ladder match.
Like
no, there are no gimmick matches from what I can tell.
No, and going back, it was all, you know, you would have a TLC match. You would have the Money in the Bank matches always used to be at WrestleMania. You'd always have, you know, something which had that element of danger or that element of risk, and it was at least something than just a one-on-one or a triple threat straight wrestling match. It was, no, this is something a bit crazy and a bit carny and just something different for a fan of a different type of wrestling. We can cater to you as well because we are a broad company with 5,000 employees. And instead it's just, nope, all we can do is one-on-one wrestling matches, and if you're lucky, you've got a fatal four-way.
Thanks.
Great. I greatly appreciate that. Why can't we have something a bit fucking... I mean, because Money in the Bank started at WrestleMania. That was where the first Money in the Bank was. And it was a concept created by Chris Jericho. Jericho came up with the idea because he was told he wasn't going to be at WrestleMania. You know, there was nothing for him to do at WrestleMania. There was 5 or 6 other people who were very popular with the fans who weren't going to be at WrestleMania. They had nothing for them to do. So he said, well, let's just do this Money in the Bank concept that he came up with. Vince went for it, and it's now got its own fucking annual pay-per-view and is making history, and the women are involved and everything else. But that was at WrestleMania for years, was the Money in the Bank match to determine who was going to get the title shot in the next 12 months. I loved having Money in the Bank on there. I thought it was better than having it as a standalone pay-per-view.
Yeah, you ruin the concept of gimmicks when they're, you know, they're sort of clamped to a pay-per-view.
Yeah, like Hell in a Cell or TLC and all of that. It's just so watered down by giving it a pay-per-view named after it and you get one. It's like, well, no, if you're going to give it a pay-per-view named after it, I expect every match to be TLC or every match to be Money in the Bank, or Money in the Bank for the mid-card title, or Money in the Bank for the United States Championship, and just...
Money in the
Mojo Rawley getting thrown around.
It would be amazing for the Cruiserweight titles, just for the sheer level of fucking athleticism. Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali defying gravity.
Why do they not put the Cruiserweight title as a ladder match? Why do they not have the Cruiserweight title suspended above the ring with a ladder and say, go and get it? Because it's a vacant title at the moment. Run up that ladder and claim it. Such an easy way to bring in a gimmick match and to make people care as well about that match. People who don't watch 205 Live, they'd care about it. And it is something that they've lost to a certain extent, the ability to make people care about entry-level or mid-card belts. You know, we said about the hardcore title, but again, if we go back to WrestleMania 17, and I suspect we'll probably do that a lot if we're talking about WrestleManias in the past, but in fact, it was the year before. It was WrestleMania 2000 again, which was the triple threat match for the European and Intercontinental title, because Kurt Angle had both, and he loses both in the course of the match without getting pinned with Jericho and Benoit. That's a fabulous match. That's so good, that match. And it made you care about the mid-card, because you had three great wrestlers, top-level guys, all the charisma coming in with Jericho and Angle in particular. And it made you care about those mid-card and entry-level titles. No one cares in the equivalent Fatal 4-Way for the United States Championship at this year's WrestleMania. You can't just shoehorn Rusev in and make people care in the way they did, you know, watching Jericho and Angle and Benoit get it on for the two mid-card belts in one match. So good. Love that match.
Yeah, I mean... That's the funny thing about WrestleMania. There's all these incredible moments and marquees, but a lot of the most forgotten matches are all the ones that involve mid-card stuff, like that match. WrestleMania 17, for instance, you know, you've got Angle versus Benoit in what is essentially a throwaway match.
Just a great wrestling match. He's the better wrestler. That's the whole premise of that match.
Like the whole premise of that match is just, here's basically our two best amateur wrestlers, fucking go at it, lads, and try and murder each other. It's a wonderful, wonderful spectacle. And a lot of my favourite matches, like WrestleMania 21, always jumps into mind. Randy Orton versus The Undertaker sits right in the middle of the card. Mm. There's no title involved. It's Legend Killer versus Legend. There's a relative level of build-up. The build-up was quite amusing. These guys ended up having quite the rivalry, actually. You know, over a good 2 or 3 years, they sort of kept coming back to each other and running into each other when he was the Legend Killer. A fantastic match with the, you know, for me, the sort of pinnacle of this match is the moment where he counts the choke slam into the RKO. Never have I seen a choke slam countered other than, you know, oh, I just sort of jumped aside and then did something. Randy Orton mid air just, you know, modifies his body and hits him with this RKO. Yeah. And you think, you know, unfortunately, his legacy is now defined by his finishing move, unfortunately, more so than his ability to entertain. But yeah. It's just one of many matches that jumps to mind. WrestleMania 21 in general, though, was fucking fantastic. Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle is a holy shit. It's an incredible match. You also had Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero on there, you know, in a very, almost like an homage to the 1997 Halloween Havoc Cruiserweight title match that they had in WCW. There's so much in there. And that's that. The best WrestleManias for me are the ones that across the board bring entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, speaking of mid-card matches, CM Punk, Chris Jericho. That should, you know, if we're sitting here now looking back and saying, what two wrestlers would you like to headline WrestleMania that you can guarantee you're going to put on a great match? You know, those are two names that are going to be very close to the top of the list. And they had, you know, match of the night, yet it's not the main event because there were marquee names that had to be in the main event rather than, you know, necessarily your top talent, but also what was a fantastic feud between the two as well. You know, Jericho dragging up all this stuff about Punk's family, and it really kind of went close to the line for the PG era. It very much said, let's see how far we can take it. And it was so good. You know, that was definitely, arguably my favorite kind of era of CM Punk, where he's trying to be very kind of straight edge and all of that. I really enjoyed that sort of CM Punk entity. And I, you know, Chris Jericho, doesn't matter what he does, doesn't matter what, whether he's heel, face, what persona he's putting on that particular day, you know that he's going to turn up and be absolutely phenomenal. I love that. I mean, we can go through the first Undertaker Triple H at WrestleMania 17. So just one of the underrated and forgotten matches of the Undertaker's streak and the Undertaker's WrestleMania kind of career. That was a really good match with a really good and brutal build-up that started purely on the basis of Triple H saying, I've beaten everyone, and Undertaker said, ha-ha, you've never beaten me. That was it. And then it was a case of, well, actually, fuck you. Well, I can take you down. I'm bigger and better than you. Well, no, you're not. That's all you need to start a great feud, providing your top-level superstars like those two are, or were. It's just low. I mean, WrestleMania 10, Bret Owen opened the show at WrestleMania 10. That's unbelievable.
Arguably the greatest sibling rivalry you could have ever asked for in the history of wrestling. You know, it's on a level with the Shawn Michaels, Triple H stuff. And yeah, there it is, opening the show. You know, WrestleMania 10, the first ever ladder match as well, Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, which still to this day holds up against a lot of the other wrestling matches, especially ladder matches of this era, because it was one of those, it's one of those matches where you just think, this redefines what it is to be a wrestler and to watch wrestling. Yeah. I know that they technically had a ladder match before. I believe it was Bret and Shawn had a ladder match in Germany or something like that. But this is like the first marquee one. This is the first, you know, one of real national awareness, TV awareness. And it's not just a ladder match to unify the IC title. It's the ladder match. Everyone will always go back and say, do you remember the first? You know, the first marquee value one. And obviously, if you want to be an utter smart, you can say, well, it's not the first, but it doesn't matter. The reality is this is the marquee. This is the value. This is where the bar was originally set. And I can still watch that match and get a level of entertainment. I haven't been drowned out by these insane ladder stunts because the first still holds true. Same with the Elimination Chambers and things like that. But the fact that it was at WrestleMania, the grandest stage, you know, Razor Ramon will go down as arguably one of the greatest wrestlers to never win the world title, along with Roddy Piper. You know, he's right up there. And to wrestle Shawn Michaels, who was, you know, just kind of reaching that level, that kind of point where you thought, you know, he's, again, it's a case of the mid-card belt elevating people into stars, not being given it as a sort of, well, we can't give you the world title, so here you go, have the IC title as a consolation. It's become a consolation more so than a building block to stardom. And WrestleMania was always the perfect place to do that. WrestleMania 14, The Rock versus Ken Shamrock, where The Rock is building his way up to becoming the greatest wrestler, one of the greatest, you know, definitely for my money, the greatest charismatic persona in wrestling history. And no question, one of the greatest all-round talents you'll ever see in terms of any entertainment value, never mind wrestling. And there he is as this obnoxious, twatish heel. You know, he's kind of at this point coming through as the leader of the nation. And, you know, Ken Shamrock makes him tap out for the IC title. It's a huge moment, but the decision is reversed because he refuses to let go of the ankle, though. So, you know, Ken Shamrock crowned IC champion and just moments later has it ripped away from him. You know, very smart booking. But I remember that match. I remember that moment so well, despite the fact that I was so young. It's 14, not necessarily the strongest Mania for wrestling. Very strong in terms of moments. You know, you had the, obviously, the iconic stuff with Mike Tyson, Stone Cold, and Shawn Michaels. Mm. Everyone talks about Austin and The Rock, rightfully so. It's the pinnacle of WrestleMania and the sport. But, you know, Austin and Shawn Michaels, for what it meant to the company, it ushered
so
in
good.
the Austin 316 era full time. We'd had Austin was just unstoppable. He was the juggernaut. It had to be Austin who eventually won the title. And this was the moment. And it all culminated beautifully. The ultimate arrogant heel, Shawn Michaels, defending his title against the ultimate anti-establishment face in Stone Cold Steve Austin, this tweener, you know, just causing havoc. He tore through the entire roster in his quest to become the champion. And then you've got this amazing caveat of one of the greatest icons of sports and the baddest man on the planet, Mike Tyson, being the ring enforcer, who has this wonderful moment where he turns and, you know, counts the pinfall. Everything just culminated beautifully. That's what WrestleMania is all about. The great stars, the great moments, the building blocks to what will truly be the definition of your business, and all of that incredible celebrity power all encompassed in one moment.
I love that feud, and it's a great match as well. And Tyson's involvement, some, you know, we can all point to a lot of celebrity involvement at WrestleMania, like Snooki and shit like that, or Trump and Vince hair versus hair, where it detracts a bit from the product and it detracts a bit from the show. But Tyson's involvement added to it. It was absolutely perfect. I mean, I think WrestleMania 14 was the first Undertaker Kane as well, which people can look at and say whether it was a good wrestling match or not. I enjoyed it, but the story and the build to it was fantastic. And you had Kane coming out and tombstoning Pete Rose, and it was just, again, it was just fun and it was enjoyable and it was great story heading in. And you know that it culminated in the great match. You know, Kane had to be tombstoned three times to be beaten by the Undertaker, and it told that wonderful story where both guys get over. Both guys are still monsters and into that iconic space coming out. And as you say, WrestleMania should be a place where stars are built, stars are born. You know, Kane was on that WrestleMania 14. He was legitimized in that match with The Undertaker. You know, you've said about, you know, Shawn Michaels really kind of exploding at WrestleMania 10 because of the ladder match with Razor Ramon. And you can go back to WrestleMania 13, Bret Hart, Stone Cold, which really was the birth of the Stone Cold character, the double turn of Bret turning heel in that match as the biggest face in the company, and Austin going from this massive heel to everyone loving and respecting him because of what he did and what he endured and what he tried to do in the match, refusing to tap and passing out, and the iconic moment where he's bleeding down his face. And all of that was just brilliant storytelling. And again, that wasn't a main event match at WrestleMania 13, but it is absolutely outstanding. It's so good. This is what, as you say, this is what WrestleMania matches should be. Building stars, creating stars. I've got no problem in the passing of the torch. And, you know, the matches that we're saying there, Shawn passing it to Austin. A year earlier, Bret passing it to Austin. You know, the year before that, Bret had passed it to Shawn at WrestleMania 12 in the Iron Man match. First ever Iron Man match, 60 plus minutes as it turned out. You know, I've heard some criticism of that from maybe some of the younger fans who are a bit more used to the indie style and everything being really fast paced, saying it's too many rest holds. It's an hour long, you bastards. It's an hour long. No headlocks in a 60 minute match. I mean, the only way to get through that realistically is just to lay there on the canvas next to each other, breathing heavily, because you've both knocked down, and then get back up and carry on, which is basically what Triple H and The Rock did when they had their Iron Man match a few years later, whenever that was, Judgment Day 2000. I love that. That for a technical fest and being able to throw in the high fly, and the fact that we could see that, you know what, Shawn can actually technically wrestle, he can grapple, he's got the mat skills, he's got the submission style as well, and he could hang in Bret's kind of, Bret was such an obvious favorite because he could do the technical style hold counter hold better than anyone in the company, so to last an hour would be easy for him and he'll just keep making you tap. Shawn showed, well, no, I can hang with you, actually I can take you on at your game and I can match you. But that was so good, such a good story to tell.
What's so interesting about the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12 is the fact that it had the real life heat These two never liked each other. There's that extra bit of spice. If you go back and watch the Survivor Series match when it opens up, it looks like they genuinely want to just punch each other. You know, Brett is trying to cave his skull in at one point. He's just so angry. The whole thing is just, this is kind of where it all really started. And then it never stopped from that point between the two until Brett was gone. And the incredible ferocity of the match and the emotion of the match, and for it to be defined as the first ever Iron match. That's the other thing as well that WrestleMania did so well, was the firsts. We had the first Iron Man match. We had the first ladder match, the first Money in the Bank ladder match. You know, concepts.
Triangle ladder match.
To have the faith, the triangle ladder match, exactly, which basically was the initial form of DLC.
Definitely.
They had the balls and the gumption to try out these matches first at WrestleMania. That's what's so special about a lot of these matches. You know, and it's obviously you can't just keep creating matches, so that's fine. We appreciate that, you know, there isn't an endless stream of gimmicks. You don't want to end up like WCW putting tier upon tier on cages and, you know, all kinds of shit in the hope of selling your cheap shit shield fucking film that you made with David Arquette. But the reality is that WrestleMania felt, you know, the grandeur of it all was added to by the fact that it's not just celebrity, it's firsts, being able to experience something you'll never experience again in the same way, like that ladder match, like that Iron Man match, and to have the culmination of rivalries. It almost feels like a lot of wrestling, you know, WrestleMania is like the end of a series leading into the start of a new one. You know, it's the perfect kind of end.
Yeah.
It's like Walking Dead in that respect. You'll get these moments where some people get their comeuppance, but through that, others will rise to become the new villains, the new heroes. It is the perfect storytelling device for wrestling. WrestleMania is literally the pinnacle of storytelling in terms of wrestling. That's why people aren't excited about this year, for instance, WrestleMania 34, because the storytelling just isn't there. There is no story to be told. It's have some great wrestlers in a ring. That's fantastic. But I can go and watch the indies and enjoy that on a regular basis. That's not what people watch WWE for. They watch WWE for the grandeur, for the entertainment, for the vibrancy, the colours, the flamboyancy, the costumes, everything that indie wrestling isn't. The idea of indie wrestling is it offers a more edgier, you know, aggressive wrestling-related product. WWE is about the entertainment. That's why it's called sports entertainment. And, you know, I've got to that stage where I'm not angry about it being called sports entertainment anymore, because that's what it is. I'm fine with that because I can go and watch wrestling elsewhere. And I enjoy my sports entertainment as much as I do my wrestling. And I want WrestleMania to be the pinnacle of that. And thinking back to all these incredible storylines and storytelling moments, even something more recent like WrestleMania 31, where Seth Rollins cashes in his Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
To beat Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. They seem to have vaulted storylines. The only problem is that the current crop of WWE, the current mentality of WWE, is they don't hold on to these stories long enough anymore. You think about, you know, Brett and Shawn. That went on for 2.5 more years. They just couldn't get away from each other. You know, same with Triple H and The Rock. They just kept clashing with each other. They couldn't. But now, you know, same with Austin and The Rock. But now, it is very much a case, well, Seth Rollins won it, and then he sort of held the title for a bit, and then he's like, yeah, no, okay, no, piss off for a bit if you don't mind. You got injured, and then, you know, when you come back, and it's like, yeah, they flitter out, and they just sort of filter away, and they lose their value and their excitement and their enjoyment. And I'm sure a lot of the younger listeners we have probably are thinking, oh, you know, I remember Seth Rollins and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, but it just doesn't have the gravitas. It's not old man, get off my lawn, the attitude here is better. It's just simply a case of the story is told better. And there's a reason that those stories hold up well, because they're simply made better. It's the same reason that the old books are always going to be the greatest. It's just, you know, it's the reason why a great Agatha Christie novel is always going to shit all over one of Darren Brown's works, because there's just such a level of craftsmanship and work there that you simply don't get in today's product.
Yeah, I mean, we have had great moments in the last few years, but I think you've got the Rollins cash in, you've got the
Taker losing his streak.
Taker losing his streak in the end of an era the year before that with Triple H after the Hell in a Cell match. But other than that, I mean, it's been a lot of the outside involvement. So the return of the Hardys last year was such a great mark out moment. You know, it was fantastic. We all loved that. We all marked out like kids for the return of the Hardy Boys. And it was, you know, things like The Rock and Ronda Rousey appearing in a WWE ring and staring down Triple H and Stephanie, which obviously sowed the seeds for what we've got this year. But that was a great moment. It felt at the time it was kind of crossing barriers, getting Ronda Rousey over the barrier and into the ring and standing there with The Rock. And The Rock literally saying, yeah, this is your WrestleMania moment for the year. You know, but you can go back to, did that have anywhere near the impact of Macho Man Randy Savage losing and then Miss Elizabeth coming down to save him when he's getting attacked by Cherie? Do you know what I mean?
That's an incredible moment. I love that.
Oh, what a moment. Mr. T being at WrestleMania 1. No celebrities at WrestleMania, but Mr. T main event of WrestleMania 1. It's never going to take off. You know, you've got Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant, which was, you know, look, I'm not a Hogan fan by any stretch of the imagination, but that's an incredible moment. That was a spectacle. You know, neither guy was necessarily a great technician or a great in-ring worker, but they were two massive characters, very much of their era, very much of their time period. And they were the two biggest stars, without a doubt, in professional wrestling. And for Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania to lift Andre up and slam him down was incredible. It's a fantastic moment. Everyone will remember that and talk about that. People who weren't alive, like me and you, to watch that live, will still know and feel the impact of that years and years later, because that's something that echoes through the generations. It's just a very visual moment. And it's difficult, I think, to get that today. I don't know if there's a cultural thing or the way that society's progressed and changed, but we do seem to have lost a little bit of it's harder to create and capture that magic now, it feels, because everything's very much instant gratification, isn't it?
You know,
it needs to be something.
We must have everything now, you know. We have to have culminations now. We can't have the builds, the incredible long in-depth storylines, because people are just impatient and they'll just go elsewhere. And I think WWE has taken that to such an extreme that actually it's been to the denigration of their product and the degradation of it, because now you're thinking, okay, well, you know, it's a couple of weeks you get this, maybe a couple of weeks you get that. You know, Braun Strowman is a fine example of this in the current product with, you know, 2 weeks ago, I'm having fantastic matches with Elias. This week, I'm in a rivalry with The Bar at WrestleMania. It's like, okay, thanks for that. Like, no real explanation other than, I'm angry and I can do whatever I want. It's like, well, no, that, there's no
a lot
kind
of shoehorning.
Yeah, there is way too much shoehorning. This is one of the most shoehorned manias of all time. Mania 34, the shoehorn. It is just such a push to really get on board with it.
It doesn't feel like there's been a consistency with the storytelling. I think there always used to be a flow from Royal Rumble, you know, the road to WrestleMania and all of that. It felt that it flowed from Royal Rumble through whatever pay-per-view it was going to be next, No Way Out or whatever, you know, Bad Blood, whatever it was going to be. And then into WrestleMania. And it always felt like that was it felt there was a continuity over the course of that 3 months that they don't seem to be able to sustain now. Whether that's the Elimination Chamber and the kind of the nature of the event, I don't know. But they just don't seem to be able to sustain the story through from the Royal Rumble to WrestleMania with any real quality. AJ Styles, Nakamura, we've known that's going to be the case since the Royal Rumble and Nakamura winning the Royal Rumble. Yet we've not been able to tell that story in over the course of 3 months. We've had to wait till 2 weeks before WrestleMania to go, ha ha, match. You know, Charlotte Asuka, very much the same. And it's disappointing. You know, it's a real letdown that they've not been able to tell that story over a longer period of time, because it's easier to do that now with the fact that you've got 5 hours of wrestling, not including 205 Live or NXT, a week from the WWE. How are they not able to tell those stories? Whereas, you know, Raw and SmackDown, you had, what, 2.5-3 hours of the two combined? Yet you were able to tell better stories 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And that's what I find frustrating, I think, with the current product sometimes, is there isn't an excuse. I mean, a match that it's not even a match that I necessarily liked, but a build that I loved because it went on for a year was the Rock Cena WrestleMania build. Because just randomly you'd have the Rock come in, cut a brilliant promo and fuck off. Or do the tour around Philadelphia where he's pointing out historical monuments and how that related to him whipping Cena's ass. And I loved shit like that. It was just carny and it was stupid and it was fun and it built into what actually was very, very intense, eagerly anticipated match. And those two matches, I think, are the highest drawing, you know, money-making matches in WWE history. And that's because they were built over time. They were given the right build. That wasn't that fucking long ago to have forgotten how to do it.
That is the defining legacy of Mania for me. Like, I suppose, I mean, we can rant about fucking storyline shit before. Like, are there any sort of matches that always jump out to you more than anything else when someone says WrestleMania?
I think Rock Austin are the, you know, that trilogy is probably the three that immediately jump out. And TLC 2 probably as well. Those are the matches that stick in my brain, I think probably made me feel more than anything else. But if you're talking what would most accurately describe WrestleMania, particularly to a maybe more modern audience, it is Rock Cena in a lot of ways, because it just breaks down all of the, it's completely cross-cultural, it's so mainstream, and it appeals to so many fans of so many different genres, whether you're casual, whether you're more hardcore, whether you're an old school fan who grew up with the Attitude Era and before, whether you're a fan purely of the modern product, whether you're a kid. That was a match that can appeal to everybody and get everyone interested and get everyone excited. And that's what WrestleMania should be.
Yeah, I mean, someone says WrestleMania to me, I don't know, I feel like a bitter old man at this point. You know, I'm just like, oh, WrestleMania's coming around again. Like, I've been speaking to Nick Payne a lot lately, and he's so excited about Mania, you know, because he still feels the charm and the joy that he felt when he was younger. And obviously he's been there as well, which is obviously an incredible spectacle. So once you've actually witnessed it for yourself and felt that emotion, I imagine it just becomes a brand new animal in the way it feels. But for me, like, I get into that annoying, smarky Attitude Era fan. You know, I do think of the pinnacle of it all, Rock versus Austin at Mania 17. Rock versus Austin at Mania 19 is still one of my favorite matches. Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 19 is incredible. Oh. If nothing else, just for him blowing him at the end. This amazing moment just destroyed in an instant.
Fuck
you. That's what Mania is to me, looking back at the great moments. I don't think in 10 years' time I'll look back at Seth Rollins cashing in the same way. I know it sounds quite sad, but I just think as I get older, I don't enjoy them as much as I did back then, and I feel like I'm enjoying them less and less as time goes by. And maybe a lot of that's down to the fact that they're so atrociously booked. You know, Mania 32 for me, I know Nick Payne will thoroughly disagree because he was there, but for me, 32 was one of the biggest failures in Mania history. You know, it's supposed to be the biggest Mania ever in Dallas's whopper fucking stadium. You know, there's the potential for 100,000 wrestling fans. And the reality is the card just wasn't that good. Some of the matches weren't that great. There are a couple of moments that are great, like Zack Ryder getting his WrestleMania moment and winning the IC title ladder match. But ultimately, it's unfulfilling and the storylines did not back it up. And you can't sit there and say, you know, oh, Roman versus Triple H. You know, it might have in the moment been fine. But, you know, same with something like a Goldberg and a Lesnar match from last year. But the reality is it doesn't hold up to this incredible captive imagination that was things like Savage versus Steamboat at WrestleMania 3, you know, the kind of perfect match, still widely considered the greatest WrestleMania match, so to speak. You know, this wonderful culmination of things. You know, it just cemented the fact that Savage was more than just this outrageous pomp and circumstance performer. You know, it's ironic as well, because obviously a lot of people do remember this incredible you know, collision between Hogan and Andre the Giant, and people are less inclined to remember things like the mid-card where the real meat of the talent was at the time. And, you know, so very much like it is now in a lot of ways. You know, the main eventers, they are there to make money more so than they are to make incredible moments, so to speak. They sort of, they're there for the entertainment aspect. They're not there for the athleticism, for the, you know, Jeff Hardy diving off of a 20-foot ladder at WrestleMania 16 is absolutely incredible. But it just doesn't, you know, the people, unfortunately, are more inclined to remember the stars. They're probably going to remember Roman Reigns beating Lesnar here for the title more so. So it's, you know, it is a real love-hate relationship for me now with WrestleMania. Am I looking forward to watching it, you know, in the right circumstance with the right people? Yes, absolutely. But as an overall premise, I don't get hyped for it much more than I would for a standard pay-per-view. You know, if I don't see it and I have to watch it the next day when I've had a bit more sleep, so be it. That's okay with me.
Yeah, I agree. There's nothing much that is going to keep me awake to watch WrestleMania this year. I think there's going to be a lot of fantastic matches. We've spoken about it a lot on Week in the Universes. But in terms of the storylines and the builds, it has been very disappointing. And as you say, it's just not had that build. But it's not as if WrestleMania has always provided great moments. I mean, for every Daniel Bryan overcoming the odds to finally win the title when that should never have happened because he wins two matches in a night, you get Hulk Hogan slam, you know, invading Bret Hart's match with Yokozuna to defend Bret Hart because Yokozuna got disqualified, and then beating Yokozuna for the title, which he was never, like, you know, on the card beforehand to be in. Yet he still manages to steal the WrestleMania moment, and stupid shit like that that will be forever the reason why I despise Hulk Hogan. There's been a lot of terrible moments. You know, there's been great moments. It's always been an entertainment spectacle. And look, do I want to watch Undertaker John Cena this year? No, but I can respect the fact that it is going to bring in a wider audience and it has mass appeal. And the same with watching Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. I understand that's marquee. I understand it has a wider appeal, whether it's my cup of tea or not is an irrelevance. I understand it has that mass appeal. And that's what WrestleMania is. It's not for wrestling purists, as you say. This is not Ring of Honor. This is not NJPW. This is for mass appeal, to bring in as many people as possible. And don't tell me that NJPW don't do that, by the way, because that's why they're getting in the Chris Jerichos and the Rey Mysterios, to give them more clout to a wider global audience. Of course, they're going to be able to provide great wrestling content, but they also provide a name value and a charisma and an entertainment value. WWE have been doing it with celebrities since, I mean, Muhammad Ali is at the first WrestleMania. They've been bringing in celebrities and big names since day one of WrestleMania. That's what WrestleMania is. This is Vince McMahon's chance to show off his product to the biggest possible audience, the biggest audience he will get all year. And this is his opportunity to capture as many of them as possible, to retain as many of that WrestleMania bump as possible for the coming year. That's why the Raw after WrestleMania is always so important, is always so big, and is always so, you know, eagerly anticipated. It's because that's how, right, we've got to keep them. So we have a great WrestleMania, then we have a great Raw after WrestleMania, and hopefully we can keep them for a couple of months, and we can get some more subscriptions in for the network and a couple more months of their money before they cancel because it's shit, or whatever. So WrestleMania is Vince's money-making feeding frenzy, and it is going to be as wide an appeal as possible. And that has been the case since WrestleMania 1. That's what WrestleMania is. And that's what we love about it. We can hate it as well at times, but it's what we love about it. It's pure spectacle. It's pure theatre. This is wrestling theatre at its absolute greatest. And come what may, you know what? I will look forward to WrestleMania as the days go by this week, and I will enjoy large portions of WrestleMania because the wrestling content is going to be fantastic on paper. I wish the build was as good as what we've seen from the Rock Austins over the years, and all right, none of them are, but WrestleMania is still the absolute pinnacle of the wrestling calendar for the vast majority of wrestling fans who aren't completely smarky and fuck all of WWE. I guarantee they write on their Twitter, "Fuck WWE, I'll never watch WrestleMania," while sitting and watching WrestleMania, pretending that they're not. Oh my God,
I hope Snooki comes back. WWE Network.
Yeah, I'm going to cancel the network, but I'm going to watch because I want to see if Dolph Ziggler wins the Battle Royal because he's my favorite.
Yeah, that'll do. That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
Absolutely.
Anything to add, mate, in terms of WrestleMania? Any moments you want to share before we close the door on the beginning of a new venture in Manic Mondays?
Absolutely. I think the only thing that's left to say is simply that there will be Week in the Universes, obviously, coming out this week to review Raw, SmackDown, and if Dexter turns up to work, possibly NXT in 205 Live. And I suspect there will be WrestleMania reviews to follow as well as we enjoy WrestleMania on Sunday, 6 days' time. And 205 Live will be back. There will be polls going up, things for you to vote on that you want us to talk about. 205 Live. Manic Mondays is your opportunity.
It's Manic Mondays, our version of 205 Live. Great content, but nobody's listening.
Absolutely. Manic Mondays is more than any of our other shows, your opportunity to dictate what it is that we talk about and what it is that you listen to. So we put out the polls, we put out votes, we put out two, one of my ideas, one of Amir's ideas. You vote on them each week or however often that it is we have time to do Manic Mondays and decide what it is that you want us to talk about. Out of those eight options, we talk about two and we'll do a mid-carder of the week and we'll do a match of the week as well and possibly some other carny shenanigans that we think of as the weeks go by. Season two of Manic Mondays is coming back. This is a WrestleMania special. Listen to it, you absolute fucks.
I absolutely concur. Check out all the social media links as always. Buy a t-shirt if you've got a spare bit of chunk of change lying around and help us out here at the Smart Plug. You can get our t-shirt smartplug.bigcartel.com. Failing that, don't forget to get involved in everything that we're doing in terms of, you know, the social media and obviously the podcast itself at the Smart Plug, where you can get all the details you'll ever need to know. From myself and Steve, thank you very much for listening to this version of Manic Mondays. Enjoy your Monday, and we hope it's not quite as manic as our podcast is. Take it easy, gang.